I need you to help me with something, Sarah said, a look of concern on her face. I need help coming to grips with this whole subject of orchestration. It sounds so mechanical, so deadening. When I think of it, I picture a shop full of people working dispassionately, each of them doing things in identically the same way, like robots. Certainly you can't be saying that. But I don't know how else to think about it. She paused with uncertainty, but then, as though deciding she had made her point, grew quiet and waited for my answer. Sarah, I began softly, if the business development process were only about orchestration, I would agree with you. It would be deadly. Absent a higher purpose, all habits are deadly. Because that's all orchestration really is, Sarah, a habit, a way of doing something habitually. The problem is you can't understand the value of an entire process by separating it from its parts, or its parts from the process. Because once you separate the parts of a process, once you take a process apart, there is no process. There is no movement whatsoever. There is only this thing or that. There is no beginning, no middle, no end. There is no story. There's only an event frozen in time. You might say that apart from its process, the part of a process is dead. So when you think of orchestration absent innovation and quantification, you're describing an action stripped of its purpose, its meaning, its vitality. No, to fully understand the role any action or any piece of work plays in the business as a whole, you have to see it as a part of the whole, not as a thing in itself. Let me show you what I mean. Think back to your aunt's kitchen. Think about the process of baking a pie. Certainly, when you remember the entire process you and your aunt went through, you remember much more than any single part of it. Isn't that true? Sarah smiled warmly, reliving the experience in her aunt's kitchen. Yes, of course that's true, she responded. It all melts together into a sensation, you might say, into a picture, and smells and movements and things fused together with my aunt's remarks and her laughter and her hands doing the things they did on the cutting board. Exactly the opposite of what I imagine orchestration to be, she said firmly. In fact, that's what was so special to me about the kitchen, the creativity of it all, the continuous stream of surprises. But think about it, Sarah. Is that really true? Wasn't there a specific way your aunt taught you to cut the fruit, a specific way to hold it, a specific way to prepare it? Wasn't there a specific way to do everything your aunt taught you to do? And wasn't the creativity, the continuous stream of surprises, a result not just of the specific work you were doing, but of your continuous and exhilarating experience of improving as you learned how to do these very specific tasks better and better until you could do them almost as well as your aunt? Wasn't that where the joy came from? That if you were resigned to doing one thing, one way, forever, without ever improving, there would be no joy. There'd only be the same deadening routine. And isn't that what your aunt taught you as she taught you to bake pies, the mystery that change can bring? So of course there needs to be orchestration, Sarah. There needs to be a way we do something. There needs to be a set routine. Because without it, there would be nothing to improve upon. And without improvement, there'd be no reason to be. We would be machines, or as you called them, robots. There would be the tyranny of routine. There'd be the monotony and the boredom you so eloquently describe. But with the process, with the continuous innovation and quantification that precedes the orchestration and that follows it, with this continuous investigation into the way of work, the work itself becomes key to our own personal transformation. The work itself becomes something other than a habit. It becomes an exploration into who we are and how we express ourselves in relationship to something much larger. First, the position we fill. Then the function it fills. Then the business within which the function fulfills both itself and the business, without which it wouldn't exist. Then the world within which the business fulfills its purpose, as well as the purpose of the people with whom and for whom it comes into contact. And so on and so forth. What I've just described is the thrill of apprenticeship, the learning and growing that you experienced in the kitchen under your aunt's tutelage. That's one level of experience, but there are more. A second kind of experience is when you begin to develop a certain level of mastery of the orchestrated skills your aunt introduced you to, mastery that comes from your practice. That's the mastery of the craftsperson. The craftsperson develops a knowingness about the work she does that bears its own fruit, the fruit of being present or attentive. The craftsperson learns that within the work she does, there is a jewel hiding below the surface. That the thrill of the craft is to discover the jewel, and that there is only one way to discover it. To practice the craft mindlessly, to become one with the work, to polish and polish as though with one's heart, that there is no way to know when the jewel will show itself, but to trust with all one's heart that one day, when it is least expected, the jewel will be there, it will appear. And so the craftsperson is one who has reached that stage of her development where she is content with the work and only the work, knowing that it is only through being there with one's work that the jewel will reveal itself, and that it is the work and only the work raised to the level of near perfection that connects the craftsperson with herself, with her own heart. And so she practices, day in and day out, content to do so, without the thrill of the apprentice to keep her going, but knowing, deep inside, that there is no place to go but here. Unlike the apprentice's stage, the craftsperson's stage is long and relatively serene until that day when the jewel does appear, and with it, a stunning explosion of light enraptures the craftsperson and brings with it mastery. You've seen mastery before, Sarah. You've seen it in your aunt's face, in her eyes, in the way she spoke to you. For the master, there is only one way, and that is to teach another. The master is connected to the apprentice as though to her past, as you are to your childhood. The master knows that the process of growing, of change, of transformation is always moving, never still. It is in the face of the apprentice that the master sees herself anew. It is in the face of the craftsperson that the master renews her pilgrimage and finds the beauty of giving herself up to work. It is in the face of the work that the master discovers anew why she is so enraptured, and in doing so, brings her rapture to the apprentice to start all over again. In much the same way, orchestration builds upon that which preceded it and becomes the foundation for that which is about to follow, and in the process honors the past, the present, and the future. To me, Sarah, that is what the business development process is all about. It is a search within which the very ordinary things we must do from day to day are the essential hub of the wheel around which the search moves. On a more practical level, what we've experienced in our work with small businesses is that as the business development process becomes an integral part of the business, it also becomes an integral part of the communication between the participants. It becomes not only a way of thinking and a way of doing, but a way of being as well. You might say that while going to work on the business, people begin to realize that it is a powerful metaphor for going to work on their lives. And that, I believe, is the heart of the process. Not efficiency, not effectiveness, not more money, not to downsize or get lean, but to simply and finally create more life for everyone who comes into contact with the business, but most of all for you, the person who owns it. So I obviously feel passionately about the subject. What you call it doesn't really matter. Call it the business development process, re-engineering, TQM, excellence, or Kaizen. The entire subject becomes a desultory process if it doesn't address the hearts and minds and souls of people. Quality is just a word, and an empty word at that, if it doesn't include harmony, balance, passion, intention, and attention. Continuous improvement for its own sake is a waste of time. Life is what a business is about, and life is what this work is about. Coming to grips with oneself in the face of an incredibly complex world that can teach us if we're open to learn. In this way, the business development process can be thought of as a metaphor for personal transformation, for coming to grips with real life, for developing real skills within a structure of your own design, for understanding the dynamics of change, of value, of communication, of thought. It's an idea that we at eMyth Worldwide have learned to manifest in the practical world. It is a philosophy. It is a cosmology. It is whatever you wish it to be. But what it is, in the end, is an opportunity to fulfill whatever is fulfillable in the place you find yourself now, and in any future place you could occupy with enough imagination and enough of a wish. I suddenly became aware that I'd been going on without checking in with Sarah. I've been known to do that at times. I'm sorry, Sarah. I got carried away with the idea and the sound of my own voice. Do you have any specific questions? Can I be more specific? Sarah touched my hands on the table and said, "My head is full of questions, but somehow I think you're going to answer them. I just want to thank you for doing what you just did. If you don't mind, could we go on and talk about how all this works?" I took a sip of tea and went on.